Okay, it's New Year's Eve 2009 in Bahrain. Night of an eclipse.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So happy New Year to everybody. Thank you for braving the traffic. So tonight there's a partial lunar eclipse. So I thought we would talk a little bit about the pastime in the Bhagavatam involving eclipses. So we'll start with a verse toward the end of the Lila. And that is Bhagavatam Canto 8, Chapter 9, Text 28. Just going to read the translation. I would have brought the book, but they're all bound in plastic. You have them here? The place, the time, the cause, the place, the time, the cause, the purpose, the activity, and the ambition were all the same for both the demigods and the demons. What was all the same? Can anybody tell me back what that was? The what?
Time,
place, activity, purpose. Two more. Cause and ambition. But the demigods achieved one result and the demons another. Because the demigods are always under the shelter of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, they could very easily drink the nectar and get its result. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable. So, one time, the demons had gotten some power over the demigods. That happens even in the higher planets. People think if I go to the higher planets, everything will be nice. Here's some lady from the higher planets. But even there, one is attacked by demons. So the demigods were having problems with the demons. Anybody here ever have problems from other people in their life? Cause you problems? And the demigods went to the Lord, like we sometimes do. This co-worker, this boss, this family member, whatever, they're really hindering my life. Help me, Lord. So they went, and the Lord said, I think it would be a really good idea right now to have a truce, because the demons are very powerful. If you try to just fight them outright, you won't be successful. So go to the demons and declare a truce, and ask them to help you to churn the ocean of milk. So this planet, we have an ocean. What's in our ocean here? The Arabian Sea. What's in the, what kind of liquid is it?
Salt.
You all know that here really well, don't you? Salt water. So according to Bhagavatam, in other parts of the universe, there are oceans of sweet water, there are oceans of milk, all different kinds of oceans. Could you imagine going swimming in an ocean of milk? That would be quite different, wouldn't it? If you wanted to make paneer, you just go to the ocean and pull out a jug and make it, right? So I said, you churn the ocean of milk, and then you'll get amrit. Amrit means death. Amrit means immortality. One of the main things that all of us need is we need to live. Isn't it? Nobody wants to die. You can say, well, suicide people, they want to die. No, they don't want to die. They think that's the way to solve their problems. If you went to someone who was going to commit suicide and you said, I'll solve all of your problems, they wouldn't commit suicide. Everybody wants to live, and not only does everybody want to live, everyone needs to live, but we all want to live a life that's full of health and vitality. It's not that you want to be 500 years old, you know. Crippled and invalid. Where does that need come from, by the way? Why do we all have this need to live a healthy, vibrant life? Where does that need come from?
Knowledge.
From the soul.
From the soul. From the soul. I think I mentioned this the other day. If we were just these bodies, if we were just material beings, we wouldn't have that urge. This propaganda of the materialists that life came from a chemical soup and evolved, then why would anyone want to live? Tables don't want to live. Microphones don't want to live. They don't care. If you break this microphone, it doesn't care. It has no feelings. Your computer doesn't say, "Don't turn me off, please." So this need to live was there demonstrated. Of course, thinking that the way I'm going to live is to live in this body forever is rather foolish. That's rather foolish. That's like saying I want to stay in prison forever. It's not really very intelligent. But anyway, Lord Vishnu told the demigods, you will get this nectar, this amrit. Now that doesn't mean that they would live forever. Sometimes the demigods are called immortals because they live for a very, very, very long time. But it would allow them to have strength and vitality in that body and certainly to prolong their life. So Indra went to Bali, the king of the demons, and he agreed. He said, sounds like a good proposal. The demigods want to live for a long time so they can serve the purpose of the Lord. That's their reason. They want to stay in their post and do their duty to Krishna. Their duty to Krishna is to make sure there's peace and harmony in the universe. And the demons want to live a long time in a healthy body, healthy, vibrant body, so they can have very strong senses and enjoy the world. Anyway, the demons agreed, and Lord Vishnu said they should carry Mandara Mountain, which is made of gold and very heavy, to the ocean of milk. Ordinary milk, if you churn it, you'll get butter, right? As long as the cream hasn't been removed. If you churn modern homogenized milk, you won't get butter. But if you churn milk right from the cow with the cream in it, you'll get butter and buttermilk. He said if you churn this ocean, you'll get nectar, but you have to have a churning rod. You can also make butter if you just put cream or milk in a blender or a food processor. That's what my daughter does in India. She goes to the dairy, she watches them milk the cow, so she makes sure they're actually milking the cow. And then she puts it in her food processor. She lets it sit, lets the cream rise, puts it in the food processor, and she gets butter. So there has to be some churning rod. So Mandara Mountain was going to be the churning rod. But as they carried it, it was very heavy and it slipped. And they got broken arms and legs and heads. That's interesting, because Lord Vishnu told them to carry this mountain, but they weren't able to do it properly. Sometimes we think, if I could just find out what Krishna wants, then all of my plans would be materially successful. Many times people think like this. If things turn out nice, they say, oh, it must have been Krishna's desire. If it didn't turn out nice, they say, oh, it must have been my desire. And their reason for trying to find out Krishna's plan is so they think that way they'll have all external success. But there are a number of stories in the Shastra where we find out that even when Krishna gives a direct instruction, it may not always turn out quite the way you think it's going to turn out. And we'll look at this a little bit tomorrow morning about how do the devotees define success and how do materialists define success. From an external point of view, the demigods failed. The mountain fell down, it broke their bodies, and then Lord Vishnu came and saved them. He likes to do that. He likes to be a hero. This is the nature of a young man. Probably even old men feel this way. They want to be heroes. I'm sure all the men here have had fantasies of saving damsels in distress from burning buildings and things like that. Everyone wants to be a hero. And especially heroes, they like to save people at the last minute or a really dangerous situation. Then it's even more exciting. So Krishna has that tendency. It's not that he just looks young, Navayovanamcha, but he is young. He has the mood of about a 16-year-old boy. So he likes to be the hero. So he sets up the situation where he can be the hero. He comes, he glances at everybody, all their injuries are healed, they're all brought back to life. And then he just effortlessly picks up the mountain with one hand and puts it on Garuda and flies away with it. I think he carried all the demigods and the demons too. So he also likes to do that. Yeah. Of course, then he's reminding everybody, I'm the Lord. Ishwara Pranama Krishna. There's no, what is the sense? There's no true superior to me. Matta Parcharam Nanyat. So Krishna likes to remind every once in a while, especially the demigods. Sometimes they forget. They think I'm the big, we call it kahuna in America. I'm the big cheese. I'm the big leader. They need to be reminded I'm just a servant. So he brings this mountain of gold to the ocean of milk, and they put the mountain in the ocean of milk, and the snake Vasuki comes to be the rope. If you use a modern food processor, you don't need a rope. You just turn on the switch. But in the old-style butter churn, you need a rope. So Vasuki was the rope, and Garuda very respectfully left because he knew otherwise Vasuki wouldn't want to stay. We should also remember that it's not that everybody gets along with everybody. Sometimes you have to be humble enough to say, I'm not the right person to be around, someone else should do this. So Garuda said, I'm not the right personality to be here, and he left. So they start churning, and the Lord went immediately to which side of the snake, the head or the tail? Where did he go? To the head. The Lord went to the head, and the demigods who followed the Lord, they also went to the head. And the demons became disturbed. We're from good families. We're heroes. Why do they get the head? And we get the tail. Right? The reality was that Lord Vishnu knew that from the head of Vasuki was going to come fire and smoke. And he was willing to take that burden on himself. And his devotees were also. He was trying to benefit the demons. The demons didn't say anything. They were just grumbling, you know. And Lord Vishnu saw their mentality, and he just smiled. And then he walked to the tail and took the tail. And the demigods all followed him to the tail. Then the demons took the head. And later on, the demons became covered with smoke and fire, but they didn't complain. Now, often in our life, we're thinking, Lord, this is what I want. This is what's going to make me happy. Please give me this. And sometimes Krishna gives us the opposite. And then we're thinking, what kind of a God are you? I'm praying to you, giving me the opposite. But he knows more what's for our benefit than we know. He was trying to benefit, and just see, he's trying to benefit the demons. Trying to benefit the demons, those who are adverse to him, how non-envious he is. Most of us would tell the demons the first place, hey, you go take the head and get the smoke on your face. But he was willing to take it himself, and the devotees were similarly, whatever Lord Vishnu wanted, they were willing to do. They were willing to take the smoke on their face to benefit the demons. So they're churning and churning, and what happened to the mountain? It went what? Down. There was no support. Just the Vasuki wasn't able to hold it in the milk. So it went down, and then the Lord, who's there, his name, the name of this incarnation is Ajita. So Ajita, he expanded himself and became a big... It says he was feeling some itch in his back. You know, sometimes you get an itch and you get something long and you... and you ask somebody to scratch it. So he was feeling a little itch. So he went under the mountain, and when the mountain was turning on his back, it was very nice. And it says that whenever you see Lord Vishnu, all of his ornaments look like they were just polished. You see the difference between ornaments polished, not polished, right? Just polished. And why is that? Because this Mandara mountain, when it's going on Kurma, it's polishing all of his ornaments. And therefore, whenever you see Lord Vishnu, all of his ornaments are, this was says in Bhagavatam, are always looking very polished. Now, his Kurma incarnation is very interesting. We know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once assumed this Kurma form. Did you know that? And once when he was in ecstasy, in his later pastimes, all of the limbs went inside his torso and he looked like a big turtle. Did you know that? So he also takes this turtle form that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila. And also it says in the Bhagavatam that the ocean tides are in sympathy, in coordination with the breathing of Korma. They're remembering this breathing of Korma. And there's a yogic pranayama exercise where you breathe also in that harmony along with Korma. Korma is mentioned at the very, very end of Bhagavatam. Very, very end of Bhagavatam. And Bhakti Siddhanta, and you know, whatever is most important, you always put at the end. You know that, those of you who are teachers and speakers and writers? Because people never remember what you said at the beginning. They only remember what you said at the end. So that's why sometimes when you have questions and answers, people only remember the questions and answers. They forget the class. So at the end, they put Korma. So it must be very important. And Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati had a deity of Korma. Do you know why? Do you know what Korma is the lord of? No? All rasa. Korma is Rasa Raj. He's the lord of all rasa. And there are many gatekeepers. Do you children know what a gatekeeper is? What's a gatekeeper? Somebody who what? Guards the gate. And what do? They have two jobs. One is to protect and keep people what? Out. And the other is to let people in. Very good. So gatekeepers, they let people in and they keep people out. So Krishna is very soft, especially Krishna in Vrindavan, the original form of Krishna. You know, the original form of Krishna doesn't even kill demons. Do you know that? If he wants to kill demons, he takes his Vasudev mood. He's very, very soft and loving. He's giving himself to his devotees. He's allowing his devotees to control him. And therefore, Krishna's expansions, incarnations, devotees, they act as gatekeepers to protect Krishna. You can't just go there. There's someone at the gate. So who are some of the gatekeepers that protect the Dham and protect Krishna? Jayam Vijay? Yeah. Who else? Who in Vrindavan protects Krishna? Lord Shiva? Who else? Purnamasi, yes. Vrindadevi? Balaram? Hanuman? Maybe. One of them is Korma. So he's the lord of Rasa, and he also acts as one of the gatekeepers to admit people into their relationships with Krishna. So he's very happily, in great bliss, swimming in this ocean of milk while he's having his back scratched and his ornaments polished. So as they're churning, they become very tired. Sometimes in our service, we become very tired, isn't it? And as everyone became tired, then Lord Vishnu manifested himself on the top of the mountain also with 1,000 arms. So he was under the mountain. He was churning the rope, the snake rope. And he was on top of the mountain. So 3 forms simultaneously. Then he entered into everyone. How did he enter into everyone? Does anyone know? He entered into Vasuki, the demons, and the demigods. Does anyone know how he entered into each of them? As the different modes. So he entered into Vasuki as the mode of ignorance, into the demons as the mode of passion, and the demigods as the mode of goodness. And then each of them got energy. If somebody's not normally in the mode of goodness, it's very hard for them to wake up early in the morning. They don't feel any energy early in the morning. They can't function. They can't do anything but sleep when the mode of goodness is dominant. People who are naturally in the mode of ignorance, they feel energy at night. Right? Energizes them. It's in other words, their bodies and minds are in sync with that mode. It's like the right kind of food for them. You understand? Like each of us has our particular foods that energize us, our particular activities. So there are certain modes that energize different people. So Krishna he's responding and energizing people in different ways. So they're churning, and then out of the ocean comes, what comes out of the ocean? Anybody knows what comes out of the ocean? Poison. First there was the poison, right? And who drank the poison?
Shiva.
All right. And he took the whole ocean of poison and made it into just little hand. And when he drank it, what happened? Yeah, it made a blue line, which is like his, it's like a badge of honor, you know? As someone fights in a war, they show off their scars. That's his. And that's the mercy of the devotees. The devotees are willing to swallow an ocean of poison to benefit other living entities. They're willing to sacrifice their lives, their wealth, their intelligence, their time, their energy to benefit others. And this is exemplified by Lord Shiva. What else then came out of the ocean? Airavata, the elephant. Oh, and Lord Vishnu had told the demigods, when things come out of the ocean, be peaceful. So also Uchishrava, the horse. Lakshmi Devi came out. And very interesting instruction by Lakshmi Devi, where she's looking to see who am I going to marry. And she looks, these are all the top people in the universe. And she checks them out. She says, you know, all of them have a fault. This one has a long life, but they get angry. This one's conquered anger, but they're not going to live very long. You know, this, everybody has some fault. She says, only the Lord has no fault. My dear friends, only Krishna will meet all of our needs and fulfill all of our desires. Only Krishna. Only Krishna. Detachment and renunciation does not come by denying desires, by denying needs, by repressing them, but by going to Krishna for their ultimate fulfillment on the spiritual level. If you've just eaten a big meal, it's easy to fast. If you're full with Krishna, then you have no interest in the things of this world, which can never fully meet your needs. And when you're full with Krishna, only then can you really have loving relationships with other living entities. Only then. Oh, the goddess of fortune shows us only Krishna can really satisfy us. Nobody else is going to satisfy us. Nobody else, no other situation. So much of our frustration comes from having that expectation. I think my wife is going to fully satisfy all of my needs and desires. My husband will fully satisfy all of my needs and desires. My children will. My work will. My career. The government. No, it's not possible. And then we get frustrated and angry. Why aren't you meeting my needs? Isn't it? And then sometimes we say, okay, I just won't care anymore. It won't matter to me anymore. I'll just be detached. And then it doesn't work. And again you think, why aren't you meeting my needs? Why isn't the situation meeting my needs? The solution is that one must go to Krishna. One must go to Krishna. If one goes to Krishna, as Prabhupada says in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, then you're completely filled up. And then as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you have no need to do anything. You don't need to depend on anybody, all your relationships then are on the platform of freedom. They're on the platform of service. So Lakshmi Devi chose the Lord as her husband, and then finally what came out of the ocean was? Dhanvantari, holding the jug of nectar, which was immediately seized by the demons. And because demons seized it, they started to fight. And the powerful demons were going to take it, so the weaker demons said, maybe we should share it with the demigods, because they worked hard for it too. They didn't want to share it with the demigods, but they thought that way they'll get some. That was their tactic. And the demigods, what do they do when they're in trouble? They depend on the Lord. So they depend on the Lord, and all of a sudden, there was this very beautiful young woman. And nobody asked, well, where'd you come from? And there she was, and she was so attractive that the demons particularly, they just lost all of their good sense. is that the result of lust is you lose all of your good intelligence. We see so many people in this world, they're rich, they're famous, so many things, and for lust, they lose all their intelligence. Right? At least once in a month, there's some headline news of some other rich, famous, intelligent person who's thrown their life away for lust. True or not true? Right? So the demons, they lose all. Here they have the nectar of immortality right in their own hands. Just imagine, you have this immortal nectar in your hands, and you just, sure, do with it whatever you like. And she even tells them. She says, my dear demons, don't trust an attractive young woman walking around alone. She says, don't trust me. They said, that's okay. They said, look, we're quarreling. We'd like you to settle our quarrel. She said, I'll do it as long as you agree with whatever I do. Don't make those sort of agreements with people. Yeah. Will you agree with whatever I decide? Sure. So then she told everyone to take, they gave her the jug of nectar. She told everyone to take a bath. Then she told the demigods, go sit over there. And they did. And then she went to the demons and said, you know, those demigods, they're not so patient as all of you great heroes. So I'm going to serve them first. You just wait. And they didn't want to upset her, so they just sat there. And then she went and gave it all to the demigods. But Rahu noticed, this is the trick of the Lord, and so he snuck over there. And it said that even Lord Vishnu didn't notice him. And Lord Vishnu didn't notice him because Lord Vishnu wanted to show the effect of the nectar. So as Rahu was drinking the nectar, the sun and the moon point out, hey, there's a demon. Many times the demons try to sneak in among the devotees. If a demon wants to cause a lot of trouble, they'll pretend to be a devotee. Like if you want to commit really bad crimes, you dress up as a police officer. Isn't it? At least in America, I think there's 2,500 crimes a year done by people dressed as police officers. So we shouldn't be surprised that sometimes apparently religious people are not. Even in Krishna's pastimes, there are demons who come just dressed as cowherd boys or dressed as the demigods. We shouldn't be shocked that such things happened. So sun and the moon said, oh, there's Rahu. And then Mohini, she cut off his head with the chakra, and the head remained alive. The body died, head remained alive. So it is said that this head of Rahu tries to swallow the sun and the moon, and this is an eclipse. Of course, he can't really do it. Although the moon or the sun becomes eclipsed, from our perspective, it's actually never damaged. The demons can't really damage the devotees, isn't it? Right? Just they cause some trouble and make for some adventure. So the materialistic people, they don't really get their desires fulfilled. The materialists are working and the spiritualists are working. They may be going to the same jobs, they may be going to the same schools. They're working side by side. But all the materialistic people get is a shadow. They don't get the reality. What is everybody working for? People are working, first of all, for life, isn't it? Everybody wants to live and live a healthy, vibrant life. The materialistic people, they get one body after another. The devotees, they get their eternal spiritual form that lasts forever. And even in this body, they realize, I am the eternal soul. Na hanyate hanyamane shriya. Nitya ajar shasvato yam purana. They realize, I'm eternal. They're experiencing that vibrant life. The materialists, they're looking for happiness. They get the shadow of happiness. They get the appearance of happiness. But their happiness is at a cost. In order to enjoy their so-called happiness, they have to experience so much distress. Their happiness becomes boring. You know, if you eat the same food, breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You all like pizza, right? So if you eat pizza for breakfast, lunch, dinner, then it'll become boring. And if you eat it long enough, it'll become repulsive. After a while, you look at a pizza, you want to vomit. No more pizza. So the materialists get an appearance of pleasure. But the more they try to enjoy that pleasure, the less satisfaction it brings them. And there's so much suffering. And so much hard work to get your pizza. And so much hard work to clean up after the pizza. And then you get indigestion from eating the pizza. And all material happiness is like that. Whereas the spiritualists, they get eternal, unlimited happiness without border. As Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, in commenting on the Shikshastika, Anandam Buddhivardhanam, says that although the jiva is infinitesimal, its capacity for enjoyment is unlimited. And Krishna explains this in the sixth chapter. One experiences joy without limits. Everybody wants freedom. Materialistic people get an illusion of freedom. The advertisements for cars almost always, at least in America, they almost always show somebody driving on this big open road. Okay? Freedom. Do cars really bring people freedom? No, you just sit in one in the traffic jam. And, okay, what were you telling me? 26 BDs per week for your car? And you're just a slave of the car? And then you have to drill all the oil to feed your car. But the devotee gets real freedom. The devotee gets freedom from the modes of material nature, freedom from the pushing of the senses, freedom from lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, ultimately freedom from the material body. And the devotees are able to go wherever they want. Prabhupada said, the need of the soul is for full freedom. We want to be in the open space beyond the material atmosphere. And everybody's looking to express their individuality, their autonomy, to find who they are. But the materialists are only expressing who they are in this temporary body, which is changing from one birth to another, even in this life. The devotees get to find their actual identity. And the materialists are looking for connection, for understanding, for communication, for empathy. But all they're getting is some connection between one body and another. It's not their real connection. It's like people playing a computer game and one character on the computer game is talking to another character in the computer game. It's not a connection between the self. Whereas the devotee connects not only with Krishna, but as Prabhupada says in the prayers of Queen Kunti, soul to soul via the super soul. Devotee becomes connected not only with all human beings but with all living entities. And the materialist, everyone is looking for meaning. They're looking for significance. But what is the meaning of material things? This whole life is only, according to universal time, 8 billionths of a second. What can you do here that's meaningful? All sandcastles. But Krishna consciousness is eternal. It is permanent. Nothing here is permanent. So although the materialists and the devotees are apparently doing the same activity, with the same ambition, with the same energy, with the same time, at the same place, only those who are connected with Krishna get the actual fulfillment of their needs. That doesn't necessarily mean the devotees get everything externally, because it's not the external things that meet our needs anyway. We know of so many people, they have millions and millions and millions of whatever, dollars or euros or dinars, and they have their big house, and they have their big car, and they have their beautiful wife or handsome husband, and they have their fancy degrees, and they're miserable. They're taking drugs or something, isn't it? Right? If those things guaranteed happiness, then 100% of the people who had them would be happy. It's not the case. And some people who don't have any of those things are happy. Isn't it? We all know people, they don't have much money, they don't have a very nice spouse, they don't have any children, simple house, humble job, and they're happy. And then we know people who have all these material things and are not happy. So obviously those material things are not the source of happiness and distress. Otherwise, at least 99% of the time they would work. But they don't. And we have experience in our own life. We think, if I just get this, if only I get this, then I'll be happy. If only I get this, then I'll be happy. If only I... And as devotees, sometimes we think, if only I had this, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I had this, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I could finish making money, feel I had enough money, retire from Bahrain and go back to India, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I get married, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I could retire from family life, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I had children, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only my children grew up, then I'd be Krishna conscious. It's the same thing as the materialist thinking. If only I had this, I'd be happy. If only I had this, I'd be happy. No. The result that we're looking for is that we connect with Krishna. Yes, I know you're there. Father. Father, I'm looking at the clock. I have 2 minutes. This is Father time here. So only the devotee will get their real needs fulfilled, because Krishna is the source of everything. He's the reservoir of all pleasure. He's what we're really looking for. And he's who we seek to find in all of our endeavors. So as this eclipse comes, we can remember all of the wonderful humor, adventure, right? Of course, I didn't go on with the rest of the story. There's a great battle on the shore of the ocean of milk. It's one of my favorite stories. I'm hoping someday somebody makes a movie of this pastime. They're riding on Timangila fish, red-faced monkeys, black-faced monkeys, rats, rabbits. How do you fight riding on a rabbit? Camels, human beings. Wonderful pastime with the fighting. Right? And how then finally Lord Vishnu comes again and of course saves the day, and at the end they quit their fighting until the next day. But that's another story. Anyway, if we really want the results that we seek, do not look for the things of this world to satisfy you. Look for satisfaction in Krishna. That doesn't mean you don't have a chair, or you don't buy a refrigerator, or you don't get married, or you don't have children, or you don't make money. But don't think that those things will give you happiness. What will give you happiness is your relationship with Krishna. So thank you very much. I think now we have prasadam, and the temple's going to be closing at 9 o'clock, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. Agre Surmila Mataji ki.
Jai.